Blog Talk Radio.
Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on and reaching ladders and turning corners, sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set on the steps, 'cause you find it's kinda hard. Don't you fall now, for I still going, honey. I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
All right. So what that tells us is that we all oftentimes are not able to get exactly what we want. And there are things that happen unexpectedly. But nonetheless, we keep on going. And that's really what this show is about. We're trying to reach our guest tonight. And if you all will bear with me, I think I just got a message from him. All right, I think we're back, and I just got a message from our guest, and we're going to try to reach him again now. We'll get it together. And I think we're going to be joined with the director there as well. So let's... Hey, how you doing? Hold on one second here. Mr. Stevens?
Yes, I'm
Stevens,
here.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great, great. I understand you're there with your director?
Yes, he's about to call in now.
Okay, great, great. All right, Mr. Stevens, we had a little technical difficulty here in the studio, but we got you now. If you'll just hold tight, and when your director calls in, we'll be able to plug him in. I'm going to begin the show with our regular monologue, where we kind of give some background of our in context for our conversation. But primarily tonight, we're going to enjoy hearing this blessed story that Mr. Stevens, and I understand his director that's going to be joining in as well, is going to offer us. So I'm going to be very brief and be quiet. So if Mr. Stevens, if you could just stand by for about maybe 10 minutes, and then we'll bring you right back in, properly introduce you, and be able to go that way. All right, sir? Mr. Stevens? Can you hear me? Mr. Stevens, can you hear me? Okay. Mr. Stevens, can you hear me? I'm not sure what's going on there. But all right, we're gonna move forward, and I think we still got him on the line here, and we'll go ahead and introduce the show via our monologue. We're talking from the topic tonight. First of all, this is Building Families and Communities Institute, the sponsor of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful that you can join us either via Facebook or on our podcast platform, and hopefully we'll be able to hear our guest there pretty soon. I see we have some other callers in queue. Just bear with us that we've had a rough start tonight for some reason or another. I guess this is going to be such a great show that the enemy saw fit to really put his foot in the mix. But nonetheless, we keep moving. And again, we're talking from the topic how to transform community hurt into healing. This is part two. And really tonight's focus is the Ferguson's resurrection. And there's no better person to tell us about that than a gentleman who is in the thick of it right now, who can really give us a good view of where they come from, where they are, and the vision for where they're going. And that is in the person of Mr. Tidrell Stevens, who is the Workforce Development Specialist at the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center. And in just a few minutes, as I said earlier, we're going to bring him in, and I understand his director is going to be joining us tonight as well. We'll entertain him. All right, having said that, the number for you to call us here live is 657-383-0944. Again, that number is 657-383-0944. You can call us live here. You can interact with us on our Facebook live feed. If you're watching us there, we'll be happy to entertain your question, your comment. And if you have a question for our guest, we do ask that you keep it relevant to our topic as much as possible, and let's be courteous, as always. And just if you want to shoot us a question via Facebook, do that. We'll pose it to them, or we will. You can call us in live again here, 657-383-0944, and interact with us directly. Okay, I think we got we took care of those little portions of business, and now what we'll do is go straight to our monologue, and we'll come back in. Again, the topic tonight, how to transform community hurt into healing. This is part two. We began by talking about what happened in 2014, and while that is still a sore spot for many, not just those in Ferguson, but around the country, many people are still hurting from that, as we do mourn continuously with Brother Brown's family and wish them well as well. But we gave the context there, and now we're going to talk about how from a terrible thing, God has allowed a powerful testimony to arrive. Okay? And so we're talking about Ferguson's resurrection. All right? Romans, the 6th chapter and the 4th verse reads, "Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also shall walk in newness of life." Maybe God saw fit for the show to kind of mess up a little bit so we can bring this point home. There are going to be times in our lives where there are setbacks, disappointments, and heartaches. But the good news is, just like Christ, we can rise up above those things and find a newness in life. Having said that, let me give a little background on the demographics of Ferguson. And like I say, I'm going to let Mr. Stevens share with us, and perhaps his director, we hope that he'll be able to call in as well, share with us some of those details about the resurrected city, or this area, this community empowerment center. All right, so Ferguson is a city in St. Louis County, part of St. Louis, Missouri, in the United States. It's a part of the greater St. Louis metropolitan area. If you don't know, there are a number of different surrounding or neighboring cities or counties as part of the metropolitan area. And if I understand correctly, St. Louis is the only independent metropolitan area, or I should say where these cities are independent of one another, but they all make up this metropolitan area. But as of 2010, the United States Census has reported that there were about 21,203 people living in Ferguson. And based on the 15 estimate, it's probably went up a little bit, or up or down. There were 8,192 households in Ferguson, 5,500 families residing in the city. The population density was about 3,425.4. There were 9,105 housing units at an average density of about 1,470.9 per square mile people. The racial makeup in the city, interestingly enough, and this will be a point of conversation tonight, is thus 67.4% African American, 29.3% Caucasian or white, 0.5 Asian, 0.4 Native American, 0.4 from other races, 2.0 from other races that are mixed. And interestingly enough, the Hispanic population in Ferguson is a mere 1.2%. There were 8,192 households, again, of which 39.1% of them had children under the age of 18 living in them. 29.6% were married couples living together. 31.5% had female house that were headed by a female with no husband or father present. 6.1 had a male household where there was no wife. It was a male raising children. And 32.9 were none families at all. 28.2 of all of the households were made up of individuals, and 7.4 had someone living alone who was 65 years of age or older, your elderly population. The average household size was 2.56. The average family size was 3.12. Now, the median age, this is an interesting point, in the city was 33.1 years old. That's the median age. 28.7% of residents were under the age of 18. But listen at this, and this is a key demographic or population that I want us to focus on tonight. 10.4% were between the ages of 18 and 24. That's a critical population, specifically as we look at urban America. All right, again, 10.4 of the population were young people between the ages of 18 and 24. That's the age that Mike Brown was when, sadly, he lost his life. 25.2% were from 25 to 44 years of age. 25.3 were from 45 to 64, and 10.3 were from 65 and older. The gender makeup of the city was thus. There were 44.8% male and, like most cities, 55.2% female. Despite those challenges, there was yet hope. And what we will look at is how the city has come back. In just a second, I want you to listen to this song by the Gospel Keynotes. Jeffrey sang this song, because I believe it provides a sense of hope and guidance for us. And then we're going to bring our guest in tonight, Mr. Tidrell Stevens, and I believe he has with him his director for the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center. Really happy about bringing him on just a few minutes here after this.
Drowning in the night, there's a peace when you say.
That's the good news. Though we had a setback, we will rise yet again. I'm happy we have Pastor Ricky Wallon with us, our regular panelist that's sitting in with us, and 1098, one of our good friends that's been keeping up with us. Pastor Wallon, we have Mr. Tidrell Stevens on with us, the Workforce Development Specialist with the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center, and I understand his director is also joining us. So we're going to turn the floor over to him and have him to formally tell us a little bit about his education and background, what he does there, and introduce the director as well. Mr. Stevens, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right, we're going to give you the floor right now, sir. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do there, and then we'll, and introduce your director as well and have him do
that.
Yes,
hey, how you doing? Yes, I'm Tadrell Stevens, as you said, of course, from right here in St. Louis, born and raised here in St. Louis. My background, I've been working in the community of St. Louis for about 17, 18 years here for various nonprofits, and always had a stake in seeing our community thrive and continue to grow here in St. Louis, and has dedicated my life to doing that as well. And that's what ultimately landed me here to the Urban League. To help with such a dire situation that we have here in St. Louis, and that's really getting our men back into becoming heads of households so we can continue to grow our family. And that's basically what it is about empowering our communities.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
God bless you for what you're doing, man. We appreciate you. Okay, you have your director there with you?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. How you doing, sir?
Man, I'm too blessed to be stressed, man. And glad to be having this opportunity. Thank you for having us on. My name is Jandy Dennis, director for Save Our Sons. And as Brother Stevens alluded to, I've been a community and a youth activist for nearly 30 years. And it goes back to Matthew Dickey Boys and Girls Club under the tutelage of Martin Luther Matthews, who taught me to use the three R's, you know, respect, restraint, and responsibility. And I feel that I'm trying to personify that, and that is also what brought me to the Urban League, to try to affect the change. I have four sons that are now adults. All of them have been through the program. So I say this not as a gimmick or a sales pitch, but Save Our Sons is a program that works. It's a program that's not like any other. It's not cookie cutter, but it's designed to give African-American males and others an opportunity and a leg up in the workforce, because a lot of times it's about those contacts and connections that you have. And, you know, if you be patient with yourself, we usually can make a success out of nothing at all.
Correct, correct. Give me your name again. We didn't quite hear that clearly.
Jamie Dennis. No,
Jamie
Dennis? Brother Dennis. Jamie?
Huh?
J-A-M-E. D-E-N-N-I-S.
Okay, B-E-N-N-I-S. Dennis, okay. Jamie Bennis. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, Ms. Bennis, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
No problem. Thank you.
We got a few things that we want to talk about. Now, I'm going to turn the floor to Ms. Stevens. I was in the city, and, man, I told my listeners on some previous shows, it literally brought tears to my eyes to see how God worked through you all and those who organized to bring the Quick Trip gas station that was burned to the ground as a result of anger and frustration, with not just something that just happened on August 9th, 14, but something that had been brewing for a period of time, right?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
I want to emphasize that age range that we talked about in the monologue, where 10.4% in the area between 18 and 24. That's a critical period for young black males.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me about that, gentlemen.
Well, we try to help those individuals that's between the 18 and 24, because oftentimes that population is the one that's faced with the most adversity or faced with a lack of skills or resources, as you alluded to earlier, as you talked about the crucial family breakdown. And when you come into impoverished areas, such as this particular section of Ferguson, we run into that situation a lot of times. So what we try to do is meet the individuals where they are, you know, never to put them down, but to only to build them up and then equip them with some of those skills, because to be a man, you have to see a man. And I think that's really been strategic for, you know, for Mr. Michael McMillan, who had the vision to come to Ferguson and answer that call that was out there during the times of the protests back in 2014. He heard the resounding voice of the brothers saying that, hey, man, if we had jobs, if we had opportunities around here, the lure of crime and fast money and doing things that's illegal would not be so alluring to us. So he answered the call, and he brought the corporate sector and the community people that care, those partners like Centene, Worldwide Technology, Emerson, and people that had something that was a vested interest in our community. They put the resources together, and we brought the people, and then you have a matrimony. So what he says is we turn a tragedy into a triumph, and that's what this building being here represents. It's the center of African-American economic achievement.
Right. Wow. And it's a beautiful building too, man. I tell you, anybody that's in the area needs to stop by and just visit it. Brother Stevens gave me a tour, and man, it was lovely. It was lovely. Tell us a little bit about some of the things. I know I thought I was gonna give me a neck tie, Brother Stevens, but you wouldn't give me no tie, man. tell us about how you prepare the young men to have business acumen, even in their dress and how they conduct.
Well, it's all about the four-week crash course that we take them through, the four pillars of employment, the soft skills, etiquette, workplace training. And what we do is teach them how to get a job first week, second week how to keep a job, third week how to get promoted, and the last week is how to remain marketable. And what we do is appropriate stories, testimonies, bringing in partners from the community that actually want to make jobs available. So those different hiring partners around, they will come to our program and they will impart on our participants their company's culture, what it takes to meet those certain benchmarks, and what they're actually looking for in a candidate. So instead of just dangling the job in front of those folks like a lot of job fairs are set up to do, we try to have strategical hiring events to where we can streamline our efforts to find out what qualifications those individuals have and what companies are actually looking for them, and then just try to make that connection and step out the way, because there's no guarantee, but we guarantee the opportunity. And if they take the tools that we're giving them, then oftentimes it's a success.
Okay. Wow. Powerful. Yes, if you don't mind, let me bring Pastor Ricky Wally in. He is our regular panelist.
Absolutely.
And he's been with us since the show started. He's also an author of a book entitled Still High, where he documented his life experience of being a major drug dealer. And, in fact, when I first came to Nashville, Tennessee, two things I heard about was a gang called the Barbershop Boys and a fella by the name of Fat Ricky. And and he was there. But he's turned his life around and has rose above those circumstances. Let me, Pastor Waller, just kind of introduce yourself a little bit. Any questions you have for Mr. Stevens and Mr. Bennis, who's the director of the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center. Go ahead, Pastor.
Yeah, I want to thank you for having him, brother.
Speak into your phone a little bit for me.
Yeah, I appreciate those brothers that you brought in, Pastor Doctor, and I want to thank them because up to this point, you know, I've been rejoicing in what I've heard so far.
Yes, sir.
And I like that part of, you know, that stood out to me when you said that you have to meet them where they are. And
right.
In order to do that, you know, you're doing something right there. Because most people would see them right where they are and roll on by them. And you don't know, rolling by the evidence of what power can do to change lives, you know. And that's what you guys are walking in. You're walking in power, and I want to thank you for doing that because you gave
me
a reminder not to give up on what God has given me to do, and that is an assignment. And, if you can elaborate on that for me just a little bit, because you gave me such a reminder that I had to rejoice in a way that I was on the street corner. I was calling me the main artery of my community, which I didn't feel good about it. They had me on Channel 2 News, and then they said something about Fat Ricky was the main artery of Preston Taylor, you know, like I was going to rejoice about that. You know, it hurt me to my heart because that was just, I was corrupting black people. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And they didn't say that, but that's what I knew once I looked over it and everything. But I was that man standing on the corner, and I'll briefly say this, and there was a man, there was the overseer of a church. He came out of the building one day and made a stop to just extend an invitation. What he did was he met me right where I was, and he put a seed down. You know, I didn't go that day, that week, that month. of that year.
Mm-hmm.
But what he put inside of me, I couldn't shake it. And my life went out of control. And make a long story short, I eventually went up to that church, and my life hadn't been the same since. And so I want
to
thank you, brother, for what you're doing. Yes,
man,
sir.
Thank you for your testimony, sir, because that's what it takes nowadays. Is sometimes we often got to stop taking ourselves so serious and meet these individuals on the level where they are, because for you to give some rules or regulations or anything to a person, you got to establish a rapport and a relationship. So if you don't have any leeway or segue with the relationship or a friendship, then it's hard to get someone to buy into something that they never have done before. So we encourage these young people and older guys, not just young people, because sometimes when older guys have been set back, often their confidence is lacking. So we try to build them up. We teach them the art of communication, which is all body language, listening, and speaking. And then we just give them a positive example. And you should see some of the brothers that have changed within weeks' time. They'll come in as skeptics. But then once they see the many job pursuits, the many leads, the resume writing, we dress them up in suits, and then they get to meet some of these HR reps, and they begin to feel good about themselves. So we say, just like the Lord says, you got to claim your victory. We haven't claimed that victory before they step out of this office.
All right.
And then once they get there, man, they tell them that they're good spirits.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, we have a call on the line. This is one of our regular callers, my good friend, 1098. We generally give your the area code in the last 4 digits of your number if you don't want to share your name. But we've been referring to him as Professor Outcast. How you doing this evening, sir?
Okay.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Any questions or comments for our guest so far?
No question, no comment, just listening.
All right.
That's good.
Thanks for joining us tonight. So, gentlemen, I did have some questions that I want to ask, but we're going to kind of keep this 100. Y'all know where 100 in St. Louis is, don't you?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to keep it 100 because at the end of the day, the purpose of this show is to reach out to a national audience because, you know, I mentioned to the audience the other day, I was working in a city in Mississippi of similar size, similar demographics, socioeconomic issues and what have you. And to no surprise of mine, the people were facing the same type of struggle, had the same type of dynamics. And so what I'm saying is your testimony, I believe, can make a difference all over urban America. And so I want to take the time tonight to really hit this right, you know what I mean, so that people can get something out of it. Tell me why did you call it the Workforce Empowerment Center? Why that? I mean, how did that come about?
It's actually called the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center. So
what
that says is Ferguson, after the Mike Brown and the Ferguson unrest situation happened, you know that over in this region there was a lot of skepticism, a lot of, conspiracy theorists and people being naysayers. So felt like Urban League, under the leadership of Michael McMillan, was the perfect organization to come into this community because it's not just the aqueducts. We're actually homegrown from this community. So how we got it started was through grassroots efforts. Where most workforce development companies would never go, we were going to the liquor stores. We were going to those neighborhoods where they're hanging out drinking dope. We were going to the MetroLink where you see brothers selling weed in a baby stroller. And, you know, taking chances to get this program off the ground. So we did that for, like, the first year, and then it started picking up traction. And our best sounding board has been the actual real brothers from this community that get jobs, and they brag to their family and their friends. And they organically start to spread. And then, as you know, now fast forward 3 years later, we're trying to become a household name because now the community is really starting to get it. I think the mothers stop coming to us with apprehension, saying, what about the women? Because they actually know we are around because men are 3 times as likely not to be hired versus anybody, including our women. So we just want to put a support system in the life of these brothers because you can't make it. There's nobody that's ever made it without a support system. So we always want to support our brothers and try to restore them, like Mr. Stevens said, to the head of the household because that's where they belong. And once you can maintain all needs, that's when you become a man.
So now you just said something that struck a nerve with me, and Pastor Waller would tell you I wrote a couple of books on this thing about fatherhood. Now, you just struck a nerve with me, sir. You mean to tell me that you are deliberate and intentional about instilling responsible fatherhood and family? Is that what you're trying to tell
me
tonight?
Up under the Most High.
Hey, explain it to me like I'm 3 years old, man.
Well, we talk about having a life and a foundation with you. So your foundation got to be into something that's Most High. I don't know what your religion is, but you got to have some kind of respect for a higher authority, a higher power.
Yes.
And then once you get your life together, you got to make your personal life match your professional life. You can't be a player and a pimp, you know, out in the streets and then think you're going to get into a job and do the right things. So we always, you show me your friends and I'm going to show you your future. So that's what we tell you. You got to change the group that you're hanging with in order to change your reality.
Hey, man,
so
I'm going to have to move to Ferguson.
Gang, brother. Hey, come on, man. We need help. And the Urban League is not no egomaniac. We know that this takes a total community. So we know we're not the only ones that's doing this, but we need to unify. Because unified, we can do more things, and it's not enough resources to go around. We're trying to get some of these companies to be more forgiving, giving some of these brothers a second chance, because it's nothing more heartbreaking than to give them all the soft skills that they need. Then they get to the door, and because of a background from a third party, a background company, they get denied. So that can really discourage you, you know. So we continue to just put our wraparound services around them. And with the Urban League having 26 other programs, whether you're hungry, whether you need clothes or you need rental assistance or utility assistance, we try to undergird all of that so they can take that stress off of their mind and let them focus on the real task at hand, which is getting gainfully employed. And I'm not talking about $10. I'm talking about 15 and up, because we all know it's a struggle out here.
Yeah. And I think I heard you say earlier that the way you come about your clientele is, listen to this, Pastor Wallace, you're not afraid to go to the hedges and highways, to the nook and crannies, to the trap house and get them. Did I hear you say that correctly?
That's right. You did.
Wow.
You did.
Wow.
We got to go anywhere.
So you mean tell me y'all ain't scared to get your clothes dirty? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no.
Not at all.
I throw on my chest tailors and stroll the block and go get my brother. Because when we first came out there, they get intimidated by it too. So sometimes you got to dumb it down a little bit. And then you approach them, and then you tell them what it's about. And then once you get them in those doors, that brotherhood that they feel, that's what really keeps them.
That's what do
it. I see. So you got to keep it real then. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No sugarcoating. We ain't coddling men and holding hands. We holding them accountable.
Wow. I can't do no kumbaya, brother.
When we get the job, we can.
Then we can do, all right. What do you think about that, Pastor Wallace?
You got my vote, man.
They got your vote, huh?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I'm right over here. So as we speak, I'm in the midst of it right now. So, you know, I got to give you my vote. You know,
I see
sirens and police right now stopping people from doing things because that's what they're assigned to do based on the evidence of a trap. You see, had it not been no trap, there wouldn't be no reason for them to be over in this area. So I came over in this area to expose the enemy, you know.
Absolutely.
And in order to do that, you know, I have a concern for the people that deserve to know. And if nobody exposes the enemy, then it's going to continue. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about it elsewhere, but I know there's an enemy that does things on purpose. You know, you're not going to have no enemy that's available and not going to do things purposely. And so, I discovered that through my life experience, you know, of being caught up into the drug game and doing drugs for 20-plus years. And, to the strongest drug on the planet. You know, I think heroin, to me, if there's another drug stronger than that one, I don't want to experience it no way. But I finally got to the high that I deserve, the high that I love.
Right.
And it's just, you know, and I've been high for one hit for 26 years, man. I never had a hit like that before. So, you know, and that's getting to know the Lord, because the word did say, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him." So my trust been in him for 26 years. I stopped trusting me 26 years ago.
Wow.
That's real.
You know?
That's real.
So you got my vote, brother. Y'all got my vote.
You got mine too, brother. Right. And we want to invite you, brothers. We want to invite
brothers
out to the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center, because we never run out of individuals that can be mentors, that can make some knowledge available. It's not all the time someone's given a job, but they may just have a story, like the brother said, that could strike a nerve, and they could set that fire up under them. Because I always say the quickest way to get on your feet is off your butt. So we're trying to put this fire up in these brothers.
Is that you, Brother Stevens, or is that
Brother
Dennis? Okay, look here. Pastor Wallace he and I are scheduling to do some touring. We've targeted now about 14 cities, and Ferguson is one of them that we definitely want to come. So I believe you may get a chance to meet him. I believe you may get a chance to meet him sometime in the future here. But listen, take a minute to tell our listening audience. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Tonight we're talking from the topic, how to transform community hurt into healing. This is the Ferguson resurrection story. These brothers, we got Brother Jamie Bennis with us, as well as Brother Tidrell Stevens. Brother Bennis is the director, and Brother Stevens is a workforce development specialist. Yes, sir, at the Workforce Development Specialist with the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center. And we're grateful to have these gentlemen on sharing this story with us. I'm going to do something. I usually put Pastor Wall on the spot, Brother Stevens, and I take him to what I call my dark space. By the way, call us the number 657-383-0944. Our guests will be happy to entertain your questions or comments about the center that we're talking about tonight. So, gentlemen, I have a tendency to put Pastor Wall on the spot, and I've asked him in the past if he found himself in a 6x6 room with Little Shorty. Little Shorty is strapped with a 9mm, and he's anxious, hungry, scared. And you're in a dark room with him now, 6x6, it's just you and he. You can't come out until you get Little Shorty to calm down, and Little Shorty is comfortable with you and you're comfortable with him. What's the first thing you do? Either one of y'all, both of y'all hit that. What's the first thing you do with Little Shorty in the dog room?
I tell him, think, man. I tell him, you know what I'm saying, think about the consequences, the cause, the effect to every cause and reaction to every action. Just think, you know. Always try to challenge your brother because you really can't do nothing if they got a pistol on you. You got to humble yourself to be able to not offend, but at the same time be firm and solid enough to where the only thing that can stop hate is love. So if he feels some love coming at you, if he's not insane or got a mental health issue, oftentimes you can talk a brother down from doing something crazy.
Yep, and I think Brother Dennis hit it on the head about showing him some love. Because that's what a lot of the brothers get when they come to our building, is they feel that sense of love. So you get brothers that were just moments away from really turning in different directions of their life. And when they come into our building, they feel like they've never really had that type of love. And to be able to have people that give them what they need to be able to succeed and having their arms length change their life. So I think that's real key, is really showing them that there is some love out there.
You know, I appreciate you all saying that because Pastor Waller would tell you that's what we've resolved. A lot of times we're looking for something big or special to say or something outstanding to do, and really it's real simple.
Right.
And what you're saying is understand that if you were in Lil Shorty's shoes, it's quite likely you would respond the same way. So what would it take for you to find peace and calm in an uncertain situation? And a lot of times, it's just being there. It's being a solid foundation. It's being a pillar for them that they know they can come.
That's right.
They know where to find you.
That's right.
Right.
Because the love is like a magnet.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Speak up a little bit there, Brother Steve.
I was saying love is like a magnet. You know, any brothers that come up in our program, even if they're not looking for a job, that love hooks them in. And they might not be ready, but as long as they feel like they're not being ousted or, you know, ostracized, they will hang around. And eventually they'll get it because everybody learns at different rates.
Right.
You know?
Brother Stevens, when you and I talked, we talked about the reality that is if you got 100 that you're going after, you may not get all of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had an old man tell me some years ago, He said, if you are a shepherd herding sheep, if you run down to try to catch the sheep, they all scatter on you and run. You may get one or two.
That's right.
But if you take your time and you walk calmly, you can convince all of them to follow you. I said, wow, that's powerful.
That's real. It's definitely real, man.
That's it.
How do we implant the thought that it ain't over? Excuse my English. It ain't over. Where do we start with?
I couldn't hear you, bro.
Go ahead.
I didn't hear the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, how do we plant the thought that it's not over? It ain't over. There's yet hope. Where do we begin with that? Do we go into the house?
You spoke to it.
Huh?
Well, it's three things. Three things that are going to affect a child's development, especially in the city.
Okay.
And that's going to be his house, that's going to be his community, and that's going to be his school. Because in the house, if he don't got the resources and he's poor, he's not going to be raised right. Therefore, they're going to be sending him out to the school to deal with this. And then the schools are ill-equipped, underpaid, and basically don't have good systems in place. So what they want to do is suspend our kids and then send them on a prison to pipeline type of road with the failing map testing scores. And then once he gets discouraged, he drops out. So he in the neighborhood and the community toe up. You know what I mean? It's just three times. It's like a paradigm that you got to really answer the call for every aspect. You got to work with the kids wherever they are at. Whether that means going to their house, being in the living room, bringing them out of that living room and giving them some resources and supporting his whole family. Because if you can't support the family, then you're not going to get no results because you need reinforcements.
Wow.
So that's what the Urban League does, is try to help the family. If you got a young man that's 18 trying to get a job, his mother might throw him off of that mission because she has needs. But if you can help them to pay their bills, then you can let that brother get some training, get some education and stuff that will actually benefit him in the long run. And that's what we got to do as a family. Parents need to stop getting in the way of their kids' dreams. Just because we don't do what we have to do does not mean that we have to perpetuate the same failing example, because that's generational poverty.
Now, this is Talk Straight, so that's what I'm going to do tonight. And I like where you're going right now. Now we're in a day and time where family has been defined as the cat, the dog, and the cousin of the cat and the dog. Okay? Now, but the truth is, what happens, children, young people, become victim of the vitriol and the anger that's shared between a biological mother and a biological father. Okay? And that's certainly a barrier that we have to get through, get past, because a lot of times young men are snatched out of great opportunities like this because somebody feel like I'm mad at their daddy and you just like their daddy. You're just another one of the men trying to get over. Talk to me about how you embrace the mothers of these young men that you were, the mothers, the aunties, the grandmothers, the sisters, and everybody.
Well, the first thing I do when I meet one of the mothers, especially if it's a guy that's over 18 or 24, if his mother's doing all the speaking for him, I will politely ask the mother, can I have a few minutes with her son or her husband by myself? Because the first way I break ice really is to, out of all due respect to the woman, but to kind of break that cycle of being a matriarchal type of group of people, because we only listening to our mothers, our girls, and big mama, but we don't know how to respect a man's authority. And that's why so much killing going on in the streets, because there's a disconnect between the way men interact with men. So this is more of a social thing. You know what I mean? We try to tell the women to support the men, but you can't turn that boy into no man. You can only keep him and support him. So, you know, oftentimes the women, they fall in love with our methods because they say, it took me so long to let go of my son's hands to cut those apron strings, but I'm glad he got some good male role models to kind of fill in those blanks. Because a good mother, she can't turn no boy into a man, but she can find the right man for her son. And it don't have to be biological. That's where we got to take our minds off that biological aspect and realize that everybody's potentially a father, no matter what you're doing.
Now,
when you out here as young people seeing you, but we got to hold ourselves to a higher standard as black men and redefine that image. You know, we're not all thugs and gangs.
Right. So you saying Madea can't be the central figure in his life then?
Not anymore.
I know. I went there.
I was raised by Madea. I was raised by Madea. So
you were raised by Madea?
So, yes, sir. So I'm speaking from a place of reason
And I know the shortcomings that I had and the struggles I went through growing up as a young male, not knowing certain things about changing a flat tire or oil and understanding things that men should really normally know. This is the disconnect.
Okay.
So we try to teach our young brothers that, hey, you got to stay in your son's life regardless of, you know, how the child's mother is. And if you start making better decisions, you're going to attract better people. Because oftentimes we grow up in a household and just repeat the same dumb mistake. So we're looking for a woman that's just like our mother. No matter if she had shortcomings or she was a good lady, we just trying to reduplicate something that we can only deal with to stay comfortable. But the thing is to get uncomfortable and step out of that zone so you can actually go for it and grow. You know what I mean? You're going to change, but growth, that's
sure.
a choice.
Sure, sure. Let me ask Brother Bennis this question. Brother Bennis,
yes, sir.
Do we have a clear, I'm talking about as Afro-American men, males, do we have a clear definition of what it means to be a father and a man? Is that clear across urban America? America, period.
Oh, no. No, sir. No, sir. It's a breakdown, man. Those people, when I grew up in the neighborhood, the people that had a mother and a father was almost like the utopian of the neighborhood.
Right.
Everybody that only grew up in single mother houses, we want to hang out where they got a dad at. You know, only time we saw that was on TV. So, you know, that's a disconnected part of us that we often have to refer back to, you know, what the Bible was talking about, what the scriptures are saying about honor thy mother and thy father, and thy days to be made longer. We are raised to not respect our father. So when you don't respect
that's
your
right.
father, you grow into your father, and that turns
Come
into
on.
A disrespect of yourself.
Yeah, and to speak to that, that's what makes us unique as a team, is that a lot of us all come from different backgrounds and different households.
Yep.
And me, myself,
yep.
I was raised with my mother and my father in the home up until about my junior year in high school. So I noticed the difference in my friends' lives and how things were for them since their father wasn't in the household with them. I got a chance to see firsthand the discipline that I got and the respect that I had for my father and how my mother allowed that as well and made sure that everything, it was what did your daddy say? What'd your daddy say? But everybody didn't have that opportunity. And I've watched individuals go down certain paths because of that disconnect. So it's very real.
Yeah. You know, I was in Chicago a couple of years ago. I'm sorry. Say that, speak up in your phone a little bit.
I said women nowadays, single mothers are treating their sons like their boyfriends or significant others. And that's a big, huge mistake because they're crowning them as kings, but they still a prince. So you got to go through your rite of passage. And that's what I think is wrong, because once you grow up by a single mother and she tells you that you could do whatever you want, that's why a lot of them get into fights. That's why a lot of them just fly off the lid without using logic. They're emotional. And then the only time they have to be made to listen is when they're in a penitentiary. So
that's
really
right.
a cycle. It's a cycle.
You want to hear something funny?
Authority.
You want to hear something funny, brother? Now correctional facilities having a hard time hiring men. So it's a huge number of women in these correctional facilities that yet again supervise them in the pen. That's amazing.
It's the same thing.
That is amazing.
Breaking the man down, man. They trying to break
yes,
it
sir.
Down and keep men not being fully men. And that's what we speak into. We don't just talk about jobs. We talk about the whole picture, the whole lifestyle that you live in. And, you know, when you get through talking, if one person makes it, that's representing for our whole race. Just like one person could do some bad stuff, and then they say every black man could possibly be a bank robber or a liquor store robber. If a brother get a job, how come that can't be the social norm? To where they say, well, every decent brother out there is potentially a good worker or a good business owner.
That's right. That's right. Why not? Your boy said each one teach one, right? Bring them up.
There you go.
Pull them up.
So let me
share this with you. I was in Chicago a couple of years ago, and I was speaking with a pastor there, and we were trying to bring some other churches into a unified effort. And so we got to a certain impasse where we saw somewhat of a difference. So I kind of got quiet, and I asked him the question. I said, if we had 100 preachers in this room with us today, how many different ideas about when and how we should get to our end do you think we'd likely have? And we both had to laugh, because the truth was, because we all coming with our baggage from our background, we're infusing that into the conversation. But we have to sit down as men and say that everybody in here has infinite value, and I have to listen to find out what I can learn from the next man. Where did I go wrong with that, Brother Bivens and Brother Stevens?
You want to take a stab at it, Brother Stevens? Hello?
Brother Stevens?
Stevens? Repeat that question.
Are you there? Huh?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here. Repeat that end part again for me.
No, I was saying, where did I mean, I was asking you, when I said to him, we all have to sit still, despite our baggage and our experience, and listen to the next man so that we can put together a total package. That's what I was saying. Did I give him decent advice, or did I go wrong with that?
No, that's good advice. That's good advice, and that's what helps us also with our class at the Empowerment Center, is that it's a room full of men. And though we as workforce development specialists are teaching the class and we're talking to the guys, we're actually having conversations. So a lot of times the guys find themselves able to give out information and knowledge that they have. We've had just recently, we had a guy in our class. He spent quite a time in jail, and but you would never know this guy speaks Spanish fluently. So he's up having a conversation with one of our instructors speaks Spanish fluently, and they're up having a whole conversation in our class, and you wouldn't know it. You know, someone on the street just may think this guy is, you know, some thug, but he can speak well, eloquent.
Right.
So we learn from each other.
It's a learning environment.
It's a learning environment, and we get a chance.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, we have a caller joining us. I'm sorry. I apologize. It looked like we lost him. We had a caller join. Maybe they'll call back. We'll entertain their questions. And for our rest of our listening audience, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're talking from the topic, how to transform community hurt into a healing. And this is the Ferguson resurrection story. On with us tonight is our special guest, Mr. Tidrell Stevens, who is the workforce development specialist with the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center. And along with him is his the director of that program, Mr. Jamie Bennis. These brothers have been laying it down just like it is. Let me go to our caller here, 847-4639. Welcome to the discussion. Let's see, I think we got him. Caller, can you hear us?
I can hear
caller, can you hear us?
Pastor Dockery, how you doing? Yes.
Hey, this is Professor Robinson. All right, question, comment there, Professor.
I want to commend the gentlemen for the work that they're doing. And
thank you,
sir. You're welcome. I have a question as it relates to the numbers of individuals in your programs, and what are your plans to increase those numbers?
Well, currently there have been over 450 individuals that's actually come through the program, and out of those 450, I would like to say over 250 are working full-time, and a lot of these people are doing part-time opportunities. But what we're trying to do is increase our numbers by not only making our resources available to the disadvantaged population, but also making our resources available to the underemployed population and the new college grad and high school population.
Mm.
So that's what we've been doing. We've been doing outreach in these high schools, Berkeley, McClure South. We're in McClure North. We're in Hazelwood East. We're in Jennings, Vashon. I mean, you name it. We try to find these kids and try to get them the exposure that they need while they're in high school, because oftentimes they come out of high school not knowing or having a clue what they want to do. So what we do is give them that professional development, that mentoring, exposure, you know, to the different fields, try to get them to sign up for apprenticeship workshops and just, you know, give them a chance, because that's what it is. They don't feel like they belong. And once the kid gets out of high school, he's in limbo. So you can't allow him to sit around for the summer months idle, because that's how they end up in the jail cell or end up in a graveyard.
Hold 1 second, Professor. What I shared the other night when we introduced the conversation was the sad reality that Brother Brown, Mike Brown, was supposed to be starting a training program a couple of days later.
He's a good guy.
Yeah,
he was a good kid,
but got caught up in the game, if you will, in the whole circumstance. And so I appreciate what you're saying, that you got to be able to rescue them and arrest them from those circumstances so that they can find the best hope there. I'm sorry, cut in on
Mike Brown.
Go ahead.
Mike Brown happened, Ferguson was a hotbed for routine stops, racial profiling, police just, you know, going overboard using excessive force in every situation. But after the sacrifice, I call it a sacrifice for Mike Brown dying, it kind of opened it up to where the whole world was able to see the injustice and atrocities that was going on over here. And not just Ferguson, but in the whole metropolitan St. Louis area, the county has always been known as a no-black zone for men especially. And that kind of exposed them. And since then, we've been working on healing by actually recruiting some of those policemen to help us to refer people. So instead of people just getting flagged and getting them off from loitering and stuff like that, they sending them to the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center and say, hey, man, neither you go there and mess with Brother Stevens or Brother Dennis or somebody at the Save Our Sons program, or we're going to lock you up. So, you know,
say
it
that
takes
again.
The total community.
Wow,
neither
that's
you go
deep
to the Ferguson
right
Community Empowerment Center right now, or we're going to lock you up. And I've done
that,
it several times where I would see the police messing with a kid, and I'd go out there and be like, that's one of ours, even if he ain't one of mine. But I'll make that spiel. And most of the times I could get that kid for real.
You know what? You know what, brother? Pastor Waller, is that not a concept that we have been promoting here in Nashville, that there needs to be some place like this, what these brothers are doing, such that if a young cat get pulled over and there's hope for him, the police can say, you go right on over there to Pastor Waller right now, or I'm going to take you downtown to the jail. That's where one of the gaps are, right there. Because we know they're in the street. We know they're in the street, and we know why they're in the street. And what we got to do is to change those dynamics and give them someplace other than the streets to go to.
I cut Professor
Wall off earlier. I think he wanted to respond to your statement. Go ahead, Professor.
Oh, no, I was just asking the numbers to see if we're stemming the tide. And the follow-up comment with the police officers directing individuals to the center, I guess I'm trying to figure out, when are we stemming the tide? I heard 400, and that's a really good number, but what's the right number? What should it be?
It should be.
You know, is that easy to answer, Brother Bennett?
We got 56,000, you know, individuals that's between the age, I say, of 12 and 24 that's in the metropolitan St. Louis area. And we can affect 10% of it and do that consistently every year, then we could get some segue. But the problem that we have is it's so huge and enormous that it takes all the community. It takes more resources for us to do more good, because we can try to help everybody, but if we don't have the resources or the space and the logistical part in place, then we're doing a disservice. So we try to make a good program, a quality program, to where we can give them the best amount of help. And then if everybody gets on board, like we've been talking to other agencies, our affiliates in Memphis, Tennessee, they're trying to figure out how to get a Save Our Sons going in their area too.
Good.
So the whole
good.
Goal is to make it a model for the country.
Let me ask Pastor Waller something. Pastor Waller, you think we can partner and bring that to Nashville?
Oh, sure, man. You know, I think they're doing such a fine job, man. I'm just receiving.
I think we need to hook up with these brothers and try to wrap them up and get some out of them, man. We ain't going to put no guns in, but we're going to get that information from them.
No, man. They got something, you know, to offer, man. And it's not only from the age. I think they said something, I don't know if it was from the 14 to 18 or something like that, 12 to 18, I don't know which one it was.
Yeah,
but,
the 24.
You know, I understand the people that's caught up, man. I was, you know, 34 before my life changed, and that's how deep I was into the trap. And so young guys are so into the trap, and dedication comes from not being aware of the trap. And see, a lot of things that's going on is with the intent all over the country. You know, it's with the intent to incarcerate the minds and hearts of young people, and it's working.
Mm.
So until we stop talking about how many, it's just like, for instance, there's a race. a race that's going on. And in a race, everybody runs, but only one wins the prize. So you have to run that you're going to obtain the prize, okay? And then Paul said it like this, man. He said he understand the weak. He said, to the weak I became as weak. And the reason he said, by all means I may win some. He said, I may not get them all, but I'm going to win some. And so what you guys are doing, you've already got a double dose of my vote. Because not only are you striving to get them all, if you don't get them all, you still done your thing. Because the Lord Christ, he said, whosoever will, let them come. Brother, you don't force nobody to change a lifestyle that they don't know how to change. People are in a trap. Ooh. You don't force these people to get out of something. You meet them right where they are. And believe me, when you do that humble thing like you guys are doing, man, it's going to be more going to come up out of it. So take it easy. Take it slow. Keep doing what you're doing. And let God do what he does best, man. You know what I mean? Don't get caught up into no number. You're going to blow when you do that. Because I heard that heaven rejoiced over one. Not over a thousand, over one. Could you see a family rejoicing over one of their kids being restored? Man, I'm telling you, man, if I mess around and talk about the numbers, man, I'd be insane out here caught up in this year. I'm over here right in the midst of it, right? I'm in the midst of it right now as we speak, all by myself, surrounded by the police stopping people. I'm not aware of why they stopped them just yet, but I got a desire. Yeah. My desire is so strong, I'm going to find out sooner or later. All I got to do is just stay on the ground, you see, and I want you to be encouraged, man. Yeah, don't give me no numbers. Don't give me no numbers.
Well, one writer said,
if he could find just one soul worthy of saving, then he wouldn't destroy the whole city.
That's right. Find me a man.
That's speaking of the prodigal son. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to use that concept. Mm-hmm.
Right. One writer said, be not weary in your well-doing, and you shall reap a reward. So keep on doing what you're doing. Yes,
right.
I want to stop for a second and recognize some of our Facebook listeners. We got Mr. LaRon Coleman on. Thank you for joining us, sir. Ms. Teresa Newhart, thank you for joining us, ma'am. Rayma D. is on with us. Thank you, Rayma. And, of course, Professor Robinson is tuned in with us and watching as well. And we still have 25 minutes, so you can call us here live, 657-383-0944. Our guest tonight is Mr. Jamie Bivens, who is the director, and Mr. Tadrell Stevens, who is the workforce specialist at the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center in Ferguson, Missouri. We're grateful to have them on tonight. They'll be happy to entertain your questions or your comments there. And, again, we're talking about how to transform community hurt into healing. This is the Ferguson's resurrection story. What is yours? And wherever you're from, what is it that we – how can we take this good, this positive, productive model that these gentlemen are bringing tonight and replicate it in Chicago, in Indianapolis, in New Orleans, in Houston, Texas? How can we take it to places like Liberty City in Miami, Florida? How can we take it to those areas that are blighted all around the United States of America? And make the difference in Memphis as well, in Birmingham, Alabama, Bessemer. How can we do that? That's, and I think they've laid out a pretty good framework that you can start building on, at least anyway. Let me ask this question, and then we're going to first of all, 1098. You have anything you want to say yet?
Just listening. No question. No comment. Just listening.
Roger, that's a wise man. When I get big, I want to be just like
him. Yes, sir.
There's a young man that we listen to here on the talk show quite a bit, and he's a real person. The name has been changed to protect the innocent and or the guilty. All right, but let's just for a second here listen to him, and I want to ask you a question on the other side of that, Brother Tidrell. Thank you.
They call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself in 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
So, Brother Tidrell, yeah. How often do you run into Pookie?
You said, how do we run into Pookie?
How often do you run into Pookie?
Regular day. Every day. That's a regular day. Every day.
Mm-hmm. Epidemic. Opioid.
Every day.
Every day.
I can't hear the other call in the background. Ask him to speak up a little bit.
Oh, we got an opioid epidemic, man. It's an opioid epidemic. And with every cohort that we get, we probably find 3 or 4 brothers that's got a strong addiction. And we try to refer them to other partners and resources because, you know, without health insurance, it's almost like a death sentence. A lot of these brothers can just simply get a shot, but because of the money that it costs, they don't have that treatment. And some of the treatment programs are only for that 18 to 24-year-old range when it's free. But once you age out, and you
got
to
have money. I got you. Hmm? I got you. Tell me this. Mm-hmm. What makes an 18-year-old, let's just go back at least 5 years, 13,
mm-hmm.
what makes them mm-hmm. begin experiment with drugs such that they're out of their
mind? I think it's exposure, man. I think it's exposure, and, you know, it's exposure to it. You know, if you come up in a community where that's the norm, like a lot of people don't know about formaldehyde or PCP. I grew up where people used to get wet. And it'll sound crazy to a person not from the neighborhood, but to us it was just like a normal thing. So before you know it, the stuff that you're thinking is normal is actually crazy. And once you get hooked, it's a chemical dependency. And I know that a lot of times these kids don't got no good self-esteem. So how do you hide your pain? How do you hide the fact that you're inadequate or don't have certain things that you should have? You try to get high as you can so you can just forget. And it's a lot
Let me slide this in there. And see, this mm-hmm. is why Elohim saw fit to put a father in a child's life. That father is first voice of influence
mm-hmm.
that represents the power of God in that child's life.
That's
young
right.
girls spread themselves out thin, looking for love in all the wrong places. Why? Because they're missing that voice of authority that tells them you're special, mm-hmm. you're pure, and you deserve to be respected like a queen.
Yep.
But the young cats never get that in homes where they don't have a I'm not talking about a pair of britches now. Don't get me wrong. Let me not get it twisted. I ain't talking about
right,
a
right.
I'm talking about a man. A man
right.
who understands
that's right.
his
man,
sacrifice.
Man ain't all needed.
Yes, sir. His sacrifice is the basis
uh-huh,
of his
uh-huh.
children's success. Y'all help me with that now. Help me with that, somebody.
I mean, the woman sometimes can impede her daughter as well, you know, when you come from the neighborhood, because a lot of times women get hurt and they become a woman
right.
scorn. So instead of giving their daughter the right tutelage or the knowledge, they basically give them that jaded viewpoints on mankind. So a girl is
sure.
raised with a preconceived notion that all men are dogs, and then it's reinforced by the neighborhood not having no good representation of men. So when we used to get greeted with women that would tell us, why y'all just got a program for the men? What about the ladies? Well, we say, well, y'all always complaining that there's not enough good men to go around. We're trying to answer that call. We're trying to balance the family out so you can have some selection. You know what I mean? Because I got a daughter now, and her big problem, she's 27 years old, and she tell me that men her father's age is trying to get at her, but them the only type of people that seem like they will be mature enough to deal with her, because a lot of guys
right.
at her age in their 20s are still acting like little boys.
Right. So that begs the question, gentlemen. Let me just talk straight. Can I talk straight?
Yes,
can I talk straight?
Right ahead, sir.
Yeah. All right, okay. I'm gonna just go and drop it like it's hot, then. Okay. What business do you have getting between a girl's legs if you ain't talking about marrying her and starting a family? Somebody help me with that, like I'm 3 years old now.
Sound like a fool. But black.
What business do you
marriage
have?
Marriage has never been respected. The black experience say marriage has never been respected because if you look at history, we always had the slave marriage. You jump in the broom, but the master can come in between it to take the man up out of the household. And then you fast forward until the welfare generation came about. They took the man up out of the household one more again and told that woman that she could do better or bad by herself. So
my,
you got a stigma of women that got a pseudo-independency in their minds to think that they don't need no man. And they training their daughter that they don't need no man. And they inadvertently training their sons that they don't want to be a man.
That sounds like, what Willie Lynch said. Willie Lynch said, have the woman to raise his boy to be physically strong but mentally weak.
Right.
And the girl to think that she's in control. Isn't that what Lynch said?
Yep. So then, on the back of the page, James
Wilson, my God.
1592. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, he did. And, you know, that's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with that generation of people that don't trust. Because that's what the whole plan in the first place, to break the family down. If the system could make us not trust each other, then you're going to have all these societal ills. Like, you know, I don't want to blame the LGBTQ community, but a lot of that stems from that disconnect of not knowing your place in society and your gender and all this confusion that's coming about. And then you got pop
and that's the best
that's pushing it down your throat, and then it makes it
the norm. Right. And, brother, that's the best way to heal that is to get them to understand that no matter what caused you to be where you are, there's hope for you to be where you need to be. That's the main thing.
Yes, sir.
That's the main thing.
Yes, sir.
Wow. I think 1098 going to say something now. What you saying, 1098?
Well, you know, just about. Let me tell you something. All my children are grown.
Okay.
I have grandchildren, and no man,
I do too.
And I mean no man, could tell me that I couldn't be in my home. It was left up to me to be in my home.
Right.
That's a cop-out when I hear it. Every time I hear it, that's a cop-out. You know what I'm saying? Now, I'm going to talk straight. Me and like this right here, they want a booty call. They want a booty call. And that's all. And then they jump up and down, these women use for throw rugs, and they're gone on. So whose fault is that? Women are the gateway.
Hey, that's,
and they should respect themselves more. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
now, don't just dump it on the brother. You know, it takes two to tango. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So in that respect, you had two fools, a boy and a girl.
Wow.
And I hope.
So you said Jack and Jill went up the hill.
Like looking
to
at the problem.
Ball of water.
Yeah.
Like looking at the problem and saying crabs in a bucket. You know how people say crabs in a bucket, but nobody looks at the root of that problem. And like I was saying when we first started talking, you can't up nobody's game and give them the tools that you have because everybody didn't grow with what you have. So if you got an underdeveloped male that's grown but not really a man, he's going to make those childish decisions. So we got to really start attacking the root of the problem. It's not about pointing the finger, but it's about changing the system and the way we're raising these new generation of men so they can feel like you feel. Oh, can't nobody take me out the house. But if you ain't grow up with a dad, you don't even got that fortitude to say that.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I mean, that's coming on that. You know, you have a lot of young men that came up without a father in the house, and they did extremely well. You know, it's only a select few. You can have a mother and a father in the house, but if that individual want to run that wrong lane, that individual will run that wrong lane. You know, it's all in the makeup and mind thought of a person. You know what I mean?
That's true.
You know, 365 days a year. Look
for
Barack Obama. He's a good example for you. What was his dad? Over there in Africa. But what did he do? He became the president of the United States. He became the president of the United States. Now, come on, bro.
All right, hold on one second.
Everybody
going to
be the president, though, brother.
He was trying to respond to you.
You
got
to be realistic.
Bro, Stevens, go ahead.
Hello?
What are you saying? Go ahead. What were you saying?
I was saying that you have to be realistic as well. Because although Barack Obama is a great example of what you can be, Barack Obama had a support system.
And I didn't become the man that I am today just because I came from a single-parent household. I became the man that I am today because my mother was smart enough to give me over to wise counsel and put me around good coaches, good wholesome men that could show me the ropes and the rite of passage. Because if you don't get a man to get in your life when you're in development, that's going to be some inconsistencies when you get to be an adult. And that's what we're looking at, brothers. We're not looking at brothers that
That's debatable. You still had men that came along and didn't have a support system that you had, and they're still genuine. You know what I'm saying?
I think
I hear that crab in the bucket syndrome all the time. Listen, I'm at the top of the bucket, and I'm pulling them up. I'm not taking them down. You know, now that concept, you know, it's like a bottomless glass. You pour water in it, it's going to run straight out. Listen and have a sound mind, and then you begin to understand things more. Now, you have a lot of men that are very successful that didn't have a father. You got a lot of men that are not successful, and they had both parents in the household. I go back to you. It's all in the mindset of the individual. When that individual look in the mirror and say, I'm sick and tired of being tired. I've got to make this change. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's true.
We didn't ask to come here. And I hope.
Right.
No, that's right.
Outcast.
And I tell brothers that every day in the class, but at the same respect, you still have to be realistic, man. You know what I mean? Because everybody's not going to jump off their porch at the same time. And what might trigger
me. Exactly. That's why they end up in the penitentiary or the graveyard. They had that choice, live or die. They had that choice, live or die.
Hold on, we don't want to run on each other. We want to hear everybody clearly. Go ahead, finish your statement there, Brother Stephen. I think that was you, Stephen, speaking.
No, that was Dennis.
Brother Dennis. Brother Bennett.
I was just saying,
go ahead, Brother Bennett, finish your thought.
I agree with the brother.
All right, speak in the phone a little bit so we can hear you clearly.
I agree with the brother saying that it's still based off your life decisions and choices because we tell brothers that every day. But at the same respect, everybody is not going to be an outstanding person. When you look at life, that's just not the reality of life. Everybody's not going to make it, and that's the reality we're looking at as well. So we got to just worry about what we could change, you know, because he's subject to change.
Can I say this, gentlemen? And I think this will bring both your points together. Too often we try to make other people be like somebody other than themselves. What we got instilled in young men is, whatever your name is, whatever your individual gift, talent, and purpose is, that's what we want to effectuate. And that's important enough to where your name is something. You don't have to try to emulate somebody else to be
like
a good man.
Right.
You have it within yourself. You just got to find the wherewithal to bring that out, that which is in. So it's not the skill of the man, but it's the will of the man to do and to use what he has. That makes a difference.
There you go.
I think that brings both of your points together, that, yes, there are exceptions, outcasts, of people who have looked beyond their hurt and their pain, and they found a way to succeed. Now, unfortunately, we don't see very many of those where there wasn't something or somebody within their environment that served as a bail or support, as a pillar for them. And that's really what we're talking about now, is providing that to a greater level. So,
you said
gentlemen,
it. Everybody needs it.
Our time is about to run out on us. Pastor Wallace has been holding on the clock, and we got about 9 minutes here. And I do want to give our guests an opportunity to have a final thought, and then Outcast, we'll hear from you again. Perhaps Professor Robinson, Pastor Wallace can kind of bring us up to rear, because our show will be ending for tonight. Much, I hate it, but that's the way it is. We're grateful to have with us Brother Tidrell Stevens, who is the Workforce Development Specialist, and Brother Jamie Bennis, who is the Director of the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center. Let's turn the floor over to them for the next couple of minutes to have a final thought here before we have to get out of here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, I just want to say thank you to all you brothers. Just because we disagree on certain topics do not mean anything, because I'm still my brother's keeper. And that's really when it all boils down to it. We got all the answers right here on this phone. Everybody here is the answer to the problem. And as long as we being an example of what we want these young men to see,
then I think that that's really the recipe for Save Our Sons to continue to grow. Everybody is trying to do Save Our Sons. You know, all of us was once in somebody's son. We're still somebody's son, but we're fathers now. So, you know, that's what Save Our Sons is about. It's a call to action, a call to duty, taking civic progress, and being a person that realizes that that's how it works in America. We're in the United States of America. We got to figure out how it works, how to make capitalism work for us, and how to put our money where it needs to be and invest in our greatest asset, which is our young, because nobody could go back, start a new beginning, but anybody could start today and make a new ending. So that's really what we're trying to get after, you know, just get rid of the past, the conspiracy theories, and we call it transformative action. Everybody's not out to get you, but some people are actually out to support you. And I believe that nobody in this world has made it anywhere without a support system. There's no such thing as a self-made millionaire or self-made boss. Somebody always had to look out. So we got to start looking out for each other and stop blocking each other.
Right. All right.
Amen.
All right.
Amen.
That was Brother Dennis.
Dennis.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go ahead, Brother Steven. Final thought.
Yes, I want to thank you all for calling. I want to thank you as well for coming in and stopping by and having that thought to come by and see us in Ferguson when you did
know,
visit
right?
St. Louis. Appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate
we'll
that.
Be back.
We'll
be back. We'll be back.
Yeah. Definitely. So we're going to continue.
And, tell them about that November. No, tell them about the April 25th, man. We're trying to hire brothers all over in St. Louis, man. We got UPS, and we're going to keep doing job fairs internally
okay.
so we can get more brothers hired.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'll call you, and we'll try to coordinate.
Yes, sir.
All right. Brother Stevens, will you finish?
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, definitely. It's been
okay.
a pleasure, brother.
Yeah, brother, man, thank you all so much for coming on with us. It's been powerful. Powerful dialogue. And just keep in mind that you can always go back and archive this show and forward the link to your friends and families if you like to for them to hear it. And we certainly encourage them to follow us on Tuesday and Thursday nights at 7 o'clock on Talk Straight. Thank you guys.
Oh,
we'll
man, this
again.
Is great.
Yes, sir.
No, thank
yes,
you.
Sir.
You got a fan
thank
of me,
you.
Brother. So I'll yep. be listening.
Well, we appreciate
yes,
it. We appreciate it. Anytime.
Thank
we got Professor Robinson is on with us. Any final thought there right quickly, Professor?
Once again, thank the gentlemen for the work that they're doing. And I will continue to stress that numbers do count. And at some point we have got to, and I think they mentioned should be a lot, you know, closer to 5,000. I think that's about 10% of the population. And so what are the strategies, what are the
right.
tactics that can put in place to get to those numbers so we could start to really turn the ship around and change the outcomes within our communities?
And that's
right.
one of the things, what I said, we're continuing to expand here in St. Louis as well. So even though
okay.
we're in the Ferguson area, we're expanding down deeper into the north city of St. Louis as well to continue to grow those numbers and tackle more areas.
Okay.
Because at the end of the
all
day,
right.
we do have crime epidemics.
More institutions, more schools, you know. We got to jump
Well, we know you'll do
game,
well.
Man.
Keep on
Thank
doing
you.
What you're doing. Keep on doing what you're
Thank
doing
you.
There. I hate to cut us off, but our time is getting short, and I wanted to make sure we got everybody. 1098, you want to say anything before we get out of here, sir?
Yes. The delusion of welfare. All men didn't leave the home. You know that's
true.
That's
right.
a grave fallacy. All men did not leave the home. You go in projects now, and husbands and wives are still out. You know they never separate. But at the end of the day, $15, $16 an hour. I think $16 an hour is about what $720 a week. Now you get an uneducated person making that money. Now you mentioned $15. What type of people are getting these $15 jobs an hour, educated or uneducated? I think you hit
mm-hmm.
that a little bit. And just answer that
Look,
question for me. And I'll be done.
Uneducated
okay.
brothers, because you know you got to have skills a lot of times to get that bang
Thank
dollar.
You. Thank you.
So
Thank
when
you.
We're
you
able to
my
get
question.
Those brothers that don't have all those skills, that's an accomplishment within itself.
So therefore, they
don't want to
get them paying $11 or $12 an hour, right? And I'll be done. If you get them a job, I don't know what the cost of living is in St. Louis, but at
it's
least give them an opportunity to get on their feet and get in the door. And
right.
now let me shut up, time running.
Come again. Hey, Outkast, hey, Outkast, he be throwing blows, man. But appreciate you, brother.
Yeah.
All right, Pastor Waller, we got 3 minutes. He'll wrap us up here, and then we'll, man, I hate to go. I don't want to leave you, but we got to.
Yeah, I want to thank God for everybody who had a chance to say something, man. And the brother was talking about an opium epidemic down there.
Yes,
is that correct? Well, there's a book
entitled
Steer High, which is my book that Pastor Doctor and I, we talk about it a lot. And I encourage anyone to get it because I talk about heroin. I was addicted to heroin for 20-plus years. And I know exactly what it takes, man, as a result of being willing to say, get the book, back chases of the book. Man, I think it'll do them brothers a lot of good. And they may say that we won't read, but, man, a book is real simple, easy to read, straight to the heart, genuine, and with power. And I encourage you to get it.
Man,
But in the meantime, I'm going to say this. The Word of God says, where there's two or three gathered together in his name, touching and agreeing, there he will be in the midst of us. Now, with him in the midst, every number count and everything would be all right because that's an order. The Bible says that the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. And when we put him first, follow his order, strongholds will be broke down.
Amen.
All right. All right.
That's the guy.
Pastor, I hate to cut you. You can find his book on our website, www.bfcinstitute.com. Go to the back page and you can get the book. Look here. Time is getting away from me, man. We just started getting good. Thank you again, Brother Tidrell Stevens and Brother Jamie Bennis, both brothers out of Ferguson, Missouri, sharing the Ferguson resurrection story. And it can happen in your city as well. This is another episode of Talk Straight, your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. And we'll be back next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode. And we hope that you're able to join us. And be with us again. And we thank you again for joining us. And we will come back then for another episode of Talk Straight. With that, we sign off.
Straight up.
When you